committee and open a work session on Senate Bill 550. Steve, could you review and just give us kind of a good big picture view of what we did with the, the Dash-3 amendments?
Hey, Mr. Chair, you should have with you Senate Bill 550-3. It's slightly different from the Dash-2 that were handed out yesterday, and I'll get to that. This is the bill that sets up a high-cost disabilities fund, and it creates a high-cost disabilities grant as part of the state school equalization formula. The high disabilities account is within the state school fund, and it transfers $12 million out of the state school fund each year into that high-cost disabilities account. And the funds then are to be used to pay approved special education costs for those high-cost students. The amount of money the amount of the grant is for the costs that exceed 4 times the regular cost or regular general purpose grant per student. And I'll come back to that point. So that you're paying 4 times, which in the discussion has been about the amount over $20,000, but it will probably be at the amount over $18,000 or $19,000 with a reduced funding level. So those excess costs are very high costs then that are eligible for being paid out of the high-cost disabilities account. And then if those costs should exceed the amount of revenue in the account, the revenue is prorated among the districts that qualify with the high-cost students. The other part was the transportation language that was originally in Senate Bill 551. It's in the amendment to be incorporated into Senate Bill 550. The language has been changed, though, so that it applies to the 38 districts that have the highest transportation cost per student, and it increases the transportation grant from 70% to 90% of the transportation cost for the 19 districts that have the very highest cost, and then for the next 19 districts, yes, it increases the 70% to 80% of their transportation cost for that grant. It also repeals the out-of-state disabilities placement fund with the assumption that then that will be incorporated into the high-cost disability payments for those 3 or 4 students that are normally have their costs paid from that fund. And the change from the Dash-2 is when that out-of-state disabilities education fund is repealed. The date in the Dash-3 is January 1 of 2004. The reason for that is that the department asks the districts to report those costs in August and makes the payments in September, so that it would be in September of 2003-04, and that would be after the July 1 date that it's repealed in the Dash-2. So that was extended out 6 months to make those payments, or funds available to make the payments for 2003. And then any ending balance in that fund would be transferred to the state school fund then as of the beginning of 2004. You have, for the revenue impact, you have the amounts that are shifted among the various grants that's in the equalization formula. Basically, the transportation grant goes up about $1 million. The high-cost disability grant being new, they increase those up $12 million. And then those two combined for $13 million comes out of the general purpose grant. So there will be some shifting of funds among the school districts. Then you also have attached to that the 38 districts that will qualify for the higher transportation grants given the estimated cost for 2003-04.
Super. Thank you very much. John Marshall, where are you? Can you come up and just report on OSBA, maybe COSA too? Afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. John Marshall, representing the Oregon School Boards Association. I'm here speaking not only for OSBA, but for the school administrators as well. Ozzie Rose had jury duty this afternoon, and knowing Ozzie as I do, I think the defendant in that case is probably going to get the best deal possible. We're supporting the amendments, I guess the Dash-3 amendments to Senate Bill 550. Both of these changes are a result of some studies that we asked for last legislative session and were completed during the interim, one focusing on small school costs and the other on special education. For the small school costs, the study indicated that there was a great deal of disparity in terms of the dollars per student that some school districts spent on transportation versus others. And the proposal tries to narrow those disparities by allocating some additional transportation resources to those school districts with those highest costs, and I think that's arrayed there on the document that Steve gave you. On special education, the results of the special education study suggested that there be additional weightings for moderate or high-cost students, and then this for, I don't know what it's called here, I called it a risk pool, but this additional pot be set aside for those school districts that serve extraordinarily high-cost, low-incident students. And while there are many of those students that currently attend some schools, and it's scattered, I think this is a proposal that will protect every school district in the state. We've heard stories over the last several years of a group home, for example, that moves into a school district and brings some severely disabled students that all of a sudden show up on the school district doorstep requiring services. So I think by creating this risk pool that any school district can tap into should they receive one of those students is a good idea. While we encouraged earlier some prudence in moving forward with formula changes before we knew the level of the appropriation, we think these changes are reasonable. They do obviously move some money around, but we believe it's in a way that benefits not only those smaller school districts that have extraordinarily high per-student transportation costs, but also benefits those school districts that either have these extraordinarily high-cost special education students or are in jeopardy of finding that they're required to serve them. So we're in support of the Dash 3 amendments and would encourage your support as well.
Thanks, John. Questions? Comments? Appreciate it. Catherine, do you want to come up and maybe one representative from the department or two or... whoever wants to just kind of report in and...
Okay. My name is Catherine White, and I'm with the Oregon Council on Developmental Disabilities. We are here in support of the amendments on Senate Bill 550. We've tracked the whole issue of high-cost kids for quite a number of years, or kids who require, I should say, high-cost services, kids with disabilities that require high-cost services. The Oregon Advocacy Center, the Oregon Parent Training and Information Center, Oregon Technical Assistance Center, all are organizations that work very closely with families who have kids that are having problems with schools. And one of the things that, first of all, I wanted to say is that we are all committed to making sure that these kids get the appropriate supports that they need. On the other hand, we're all also very committed that we have a stable educational system that can provide support for all our kids. So that being said, we are in support of the amendments. We think that there's some things that could be addressed in rules. And one of the points that we wanted to make was that there's really little actual data on these kids and the supports that they are requiring and who the kids are. We've got some anecdotal data, and we've got some pretty dramatic stories, but we don't necessarily have good data. And so we believe that the first portion of this fund, the first biennium of this fund, that we need to make sure that we are collecting a lot of data, that we are engaging people both in the educational system and outside the educational system to review some of the supports, the costs, what's working, what are the strategies. And that would include some on-site reviews of what's going on, so that what this fund actually does is it starts to inform us on technical assistance that may be needed, information that would help us address these costs, because we're all committed to making sure these costs work, or these programs work, and that these kids get the support, and that we get some hard data to base future decisions on when dealing with these kids. You're talking to the parent of a kid who was probably an 8 times basic kid. And part of my strong feelings on this is based on my personal experience in that situation, which was a tremendous need for technical assistance, a tremendous need to take a look at what was actually occurring, and making sure that what was occurring was truly a cost-effective way of handling a situation. We dealt with a young man who was going to be expensive to begin with, and we recognized that. But in a period of a couple of years, he had his arm snapped in half, and I use that term, snapped, because that was what the it was described. We had a lot of self-injurious behavior. There were people bringing in national experts. There were local experts. The University of Oregon came in. There was just a pile on of ESD, autism specialists, and local school district resources. Everyone said basically the same thing. And when we got to the point where there was implementation of what we had been saying for a long time, and it was very simple, paper-structured schedules so this kid knew what was going on. When that finally occurred, and it was a result of some very strong advocacy within the school district to make it occur, our costs just plummeted. And it is that kind of technical assistance to make sure that people have the support and understand how and what they should be doing, that we need in terms of oversight on this fund.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Seward with the Oregon Department of Education. We're here to support this bill and encourage the committee to look favorably upon it. After a lot of work with the revenue staff and members of the committee, we believe this is as good a step as we can take right now, and allow us to take some time next biennium to see the effects of this type of fund on funding of special education, and allow us to consider other issues in the future. So I believe that this really is a very positive step in addressing school districts' issues around high-cost students, and allowing us to take an initial step that allows us to collect data and gather information about the effects and what needs to be done in the future. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Questions, committee? Great. Appreciate it. We're in work session. The Dash Series. Senator Farrelly, does he know? He was involved in both the work group. Does he know where? Might want to. We're in work session looking at the Dash 3 amendments.
Mr. Chairman, are you ready for a motion?
I am. Steve?
Steve wanted to clarify something.
Yes. On Section 2 of the Dash 3 amendments, the first page, it was pointed out to us that potentially it would be good to clarify some language in lines 14 through 16, although this can be done on the House side. But the language in line 15, it says, exceeds 4 times the portion of the general purpose grant the school district received for the pupil. The question is whether it's 4 times the general purpose grant for one student or for a two-weighted student. So that could be interpreted as being 8 times rather than 4 times if you include the extra weight for that IEP student.
And that's what you wanted to address in the House?
And the intent was that it be 4 times one IEP student.
Okay.
And so that clarification can wait until the House side. But I wanted to bring it to your attention here so that that would be your intent.
So on that one, it's up to the committee what we want to do.
So it would be like $18,000.
Yes.
Correct. So the choice there is committee. My preference would be to make that cosmetic change in the House side and send the bill along, but we could wait for the Dash 4 amendments, which would do that.
Let's just do the Dash 3, and we can do that in the House side.
That would be my preference.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Starr.
Is this realistic for a work session tomorrow as well?
It is.
So we're not planning to move the bill out of committee today?
I would like to move it. today. We could wait till tomorrow.
My only concern is that I looked at the calendar and saw that it was on today. Is there anybody that would be looking at the calendar thinking they might have an opportunity to weigh in on the bill tomorrow?
By the point of, I think it's pretty consensus, though.
And we have, and I think over the last few days we've tried to get these amendments out and let any interested party weigh in. I'm open to.
I'm fine to meet. I just noticed that.
It would save us a meeting tomorrow. Senator Corcoran.
I wonder if, since most of the players are in the room, if they're aware of any opposition to the bill.
Good question.
And John Marshall indicated that there wasn't any.
Okay. I was going to have him carry the bill. Any heads nodding, arms flailing, papers being ruffled, bolting for the door? No. Okay, so we are again then looking at the dash threes.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the dash three amendments.
Senator Hannon has moved the dash three amendments to Senate Bill 550. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Ready to move it?
Let's go.
Okay. I move Senate Bill 550 as amended out to the floor with the due pass recommendation, with the stipulation that it'll be read on the floor, that we intend to seek clarification on Section 2 of the bill to add the language of one student or two student weighted on the cost per pupil.
Senator, good comment. Senator Hannon has moved Senate Bill 550 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, putting the intent on the record that the changes would be made to Section 2 of the bill in a dash 4 amendment on the House side. Tara, please call the roll.
Senator Corcoran?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Ringel?
Aye.
Barr?
Aye.
Eckert?
Aye. Senator Farrelly is excused. Bill passes, and I will carry the bill to the floor.
Yeah, he's kind of a hawkish.
Open our work session on Senate Bill 819. Senator Devlin, and please come forward. And Steve, if you'd like to reacquaint us with the bill.
Bill 819 deals with local option tax revenue that is excluded from school formula local revenue. What it does is to increase the amounts that may be excluded from the formula local revenue. It increases the 10% of school formula revenue to 15% as one of the limits, and it increases the $500 per weighted student to $750 per weighted student, so that the amount of the local option that is excluded from the formula then is the lesser of the actual gap that can be raised as a local option, or the 750 or 10% limits, whichever happens to be the smaller.
Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm basically here today to try to answer any questions that may come forward. The bill has been put forward. It's been expressed by a number of people that have been working on these issues as a compromise bill on to modify the local option. It's not a complete solution for any school district, and it's just simply one of those things, an arrow in the quiver, to help in this education funding crisis that we currently have. We're hopeful that this measure could hopefully pass out of this committee and pass the Senate, and we know that there's going to be a lot of discussions between the Revenue Committee in this chamber and the Revenue Committee in the other chamber and the chairs of both respective committees in trying to solve some of these problems. And we'd want this measure simply to be part of that discussion.
Questions, comments? Yeah. Senator Hannon.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask a question to staff. If one school district used the local option and several other school districts could not, for whatever reason, the people in the district rejected it, and we got an inequity situation, of our school funding in Oregon would be in violation of the constitutional provision guaranteeing equal funding for all schools?
Mr. Chair, Senator, that's really a legal question. But when this language was originally passed as 10% or $500, that was considered sufficiently low to not cause a problem. And so by raising it to these levels, it could be challenged, but I think it would probably be all right at this level yet. But there's no guarantees.
Senator Hannon, and when we were going through whether it was SJR 18, which was the Measure 5 discussion, or this bill, the word we got from Mr. Chamoff, and I think Ozzie testified to this, was that so far nationally there's been no challenge in terms of a local ability, no successful challenge in court when a local municipality or a local community enacts such a local option as this. Or the testimony we were getting was even the SJR 18 that we were considering. Cindy, are you here for this point? Oh, good. Well, welcome.
Cindy Hunt, Legislative Council's office. I was watching in my office when Senator Hannon asked the question about the implementation of a local option bill increasing the limits, which is, I think, what Senator Deckard's, or, sorry, Senator Devlin's bill does, if that would violate the Equal Protections Clause of the Oregon Constitution.
Right.
And actually, the simple answer is no. And here's why, because the Oregon Constitution also specifically allows us to do a local option. And so what the courts have found is that in reading the Constitution, you need to read both provisions to have meaning. And since our Constitution specifically allows us to do a local option, they would read that as being allowed, as having equal weight to the Equal Protections Clause in the Constitution. And since the cases in this area are based on the Oregon Constitution and not the federal Constitution, the Oregon Constitution rules, so we're okay. Does that help?
I just note for the record,
yeah.
Cindy, you must have made it here within a minute.
Yes, I did.
Which is very impressive.
Thank goodness you're in hearing room A.
Questions? Comments?
Well, Mr. Chair?
Senator Ringo.
I mean, I would just point out that I introduced a similar bill that would have a little different numbers that would allow more local option funding, and I this is a scaled back measure that I think would be very important right now, mm-hmm. and I particularly for those areas that are struggling, this would be an important thing for the district.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo, I think all of the local option bills I know that I've seen this session so far that increase the levels at various amounts would pass constitutional muster, so my opinion is the same on your bill as it is on you know, Senator Devlin's.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Scharf.
What about a local government outside of the local school board raising local taxes and basically giving it to a school district? Potentially run afoul of the Constitution?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, there are a lot of questions around that. And it would depend on how much money was raised. Because there's many court cases in Oregon interpreting equalization under our Constitution that, in fact, allow us to spend different amounts. And a lot of those court cases were pre-ballot Measure 5 when property taxes were unequal. So, I mean, my initial answer is it's probably okay for local governments to be giving additional monies, and that's not part of our funding formula.
But there's likely a limit somewhere.
There's a limit somewhere. I'm not sure that amount is.
Okay, thank you. Obviously, the committee has gone into many caucus.
I thought it was the.
Senator Devlin, maybe it might be important one more time to just explain that this bill is working within Measure 5, and that all it does, and the arena that this deals with, is just that 10% and 500, and how local districts, and maybe how many local districts utilize this, and how this might help a few districts just give it a little more wiggle room.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as explained, this is all within the Measure 5 limits. There is no need for a referral to the people. It's actually a very modest modification to the measure, to the local option limits of 500 to 750 and 10% to 15%. The number of districts that this might make some difference to. I would also point out that we do, along with this, have another measure in the statute relative to a local option equalization formula, which a number of districts that might have lower assessed value have taken advantage of. And so that this is simply an attempt to basically, as I had indicated earlier, to have one more mechanism to get adequate dollars into our K-12 system. I think it's one mechanism amongst many that the committee may have to consider before this session is over.
So just for clarity, working within the existing local option law that we currently have, that we passed a few sessions, just raising those limits from 10 to 15% and 500 to 750 is the only two elements of this bill.
I am a no. This is not, I voted against local options when we voted the first time. Why would I be inconsistent to vote for this thing?
So Senator Devlin, you might have a little more work to do. Yes. We had commitments, and you might have to...
Well, Mr. Chairman, we can do a little bit more work. Senator Farioli had indicated his support for the measure. And if he was here today, I might ask you if you could proceed. But if he's not here today, then we might need to wait to another day to consider this.
So all I would ask committee members is we can come back tomorrow. Some folks were open to this and ready to move it previously, so we can come back tomorrow and revisit this if the committee would like another day or two to consider it, or we can move it today. And it sounds like we'd like to not move it this afternoon. Thank you. Thank you, Cindy. Close the work session on Senate Bill 819 and adjourn the committee.